And we're back.
It is The Linux Show. It's Tuesday, February the 17th, 2004. We're bringing you another edition of The Linux Show, our Tuesday night show, talking about the hot news of the week, the new product releases of the week, and all that is interesting within the Linux and open source community. We've got a scaled down panel for the evening. We're minus Russ Pavlicek. Russ might, maybe, possibly be sneaking in and joining us right towards the end of the show. Russ is in the meeting right at the moment at with his day job. They scheduled something that conflicted with the show tonight. Doesn't happen very often with Russ, but he gives his apologies to everybody out there in the listening audience. He will endeavor to be back next week and in the future. We are also waiting for Doc to call in. Doc is in transit, according to the schedule he gave me. He is in transit right this moment between the airport and his hotel and should be joining us really any minute. He'll just call in as soon as he either gets a good solid cell or gets to the airport and can use a landline. So we do anticipate Doc joining us sometime during the show. Segment number two tonight is going to be an interesting segment, so make sure you do hang out for segment number two. We're going to have old friend of the show, Dave Whittinger, back on the show again, this time not talking about Linux Today or TIPA or one of his other past hats that he has worn as a leader in the Linux community, but we're going to be talking to him about something brand new, only about 10 days old, as a matter of fact, the new Linux news website, the website called Elixir. The actual URL is lxer.com, but it's pronounced Elixir. And we'll bring him in during segment number two and talk all about what was the idea behind another Linux news site. But that'll have to wait for segment number two. So how are you tonight, Arnie?
I'm doing fine. It's been kind of nice here in California. We have a big storm coming in, which is promising rain. This is something that Californians look at, and they see it coming down, and they wonder why what has happened to the sky. They stop learning how, they stop knowing how to drive. Of course, there's an argument of whether they know how to drive here or not, even in the dry weather, when you have, SUVs and flipped over upside down all over the expressways all day, every day, we wonder. But when it rains, they really get flipped over, so it's kind of interesting.
Ah. Interesting phenomenon.
Yeah, interesting phenomenon, something I have never seen before I moved here.
So normally they're already tripping over what, dust?
I don't know. It's just, here in the Inland Empire, of course, this is pretty much desert anyway, but squeezed between two mountain ranges. But it's to see how people drive here is just astounding. I've lived in Chicago, I've lived in New York City, I've lived a greater part of my life in Detroit, so I'm urban driving is something that's not immune, not new to me, but I've never seen driving like this before.
Hello everybody.
Hello?
It's Eric.
Oh, Eric.
Hi, Eric Raymond.
Wow, Eric, 3 weeks in a row. This got to be a record.
And the munching sounds are me eating my dinner.
Okay.
I hope it's good.
That's okay. I was just eating some Chinese just a few minutes ago.
Roast beef and mustard.
Oh, that's good. I'm going to have to eat at 10 tonight. Great.
So how are you tonight, Kevin?
Oh, I'm doing pretty good. Looks like it should actually finally get warm enough to get my motorcycle out later this week.
Yeah, Kevin has been bitten by the Harley bug, which is fairly easy to do here around the Chicago area, being only a few miles away from Milwaukee, the heart of the Harley universe. Yeah, Kevin and I were talking back, must have been 3 weeks or a month ago, that we might have to change the official vehicle of the Linux show to the Harley-Davidson if he continues writing without killing himself. I was a former writer many years ago, but I haven't ridden a motorcycle in 25 years. It's amazing. Been not that long.
I had an actual reason for calling in this week.
Well, I bet you do, because we actually have something that you wrote posted out under the show list, tonight that we were going to talk about.
Oh, the Sun Letter, yeah, but actually I had something different in mind.
Okay, well, I tell you what, we'll talk about the Sun Letter, and you can talk about whatever you called in it for.
It's the late-breaking story about Intel finally giving up on the Opteron, or on the Itanium.
Yeah.
They're announcing Opteron compatibles.
Yep. Yeah, that happened just actually, 2 hours ago.
That's right. That's right. And that is worth some discussion.
Okay, well, you're here on the Linux show, Eric. Let's go ahead and talk. Are you done eating? Should we go ahead and talk about this? Or should we give you about 5 minutes to finish your dinner? Hello?
He's still got a mouthful.
He's still eating. Okay. Well, I'll tell you what we'll do is we'll go to Arnie. Arnie, you've got a couple of stories that you wanted to talk about tonight. So what?
Yeah. One of the things that's interesting is this fallout of this Microsoft source code release on the Internet.
A lot of stories this week about
that. Well, there's a lot of crooks and corners to this story. First of all, Linux Journal publishes a caution to open source developers not to even think about touching that code, and especially not looking at it. And of course, that's probably a very good idea.
I've seen that same comment on probably at minimum a half a dozen legal-oriented websites.
Mm-hmm. eWeek has a one today, too, called Microsoft Source Code and the Lesson of Pandora's Box. It should be up on the website.
Yeah, it is.
And this is what they're talking about here is that this is not very good for Microsoft. Obviously, it isn't. This was traced to an open source company, Mainsoft. Apparently, that was leaked through there. Has anything come out of that?
I haven't. Company?
Huh?
Mainsoft is an open source company.
Well, I mean, Mainsoft. I guess they dabble in open source.
No, Mainsoft is a Unix company.
Yeah, Unix.
They're a hardcore Unix company.
That's right. At any rate, one of the things that's come out of this is that there was on Slashdot the other day, there was a story about a hack that has been published that is attributed to this source code, and specifically for Internet Explorer 5.x. One of the things, Security News Portal, that link should also be on the site, has published a recommendation to all Internet Explorer 5X or 4X users to upgrade immediately because of the information brought out in that.
Well, there's an interesting catch-22. So if there has been a hack that has been done by that and you respond to that hack, are you not in some perverted way sort of responding to the opening of the code and then possibly becoming liable?
Well, you know, that's what I'm thinking. And the other thing I'm thinking is that, you know, this is an existing exploit, okay, I guess, because it's, you know, an older version. And also the code that was put out in the net is NT in 2000, not the current XP. and not Windows 95 or 98.
It's also Service Pack 1.
Yeah. So I mean, this is like old stuff. But still, I mean, there's enough people running this stuff I think what Microsoft's going to try to do here, and this is why I put these stories up there, is they're going to try to say that opening source code is a hazard. You know? And say, oh, you know, this is one of their...
Well, of course it's a hazard if you have licensing terms on it, which mean only criminals can look at it.
But, I mean, this is where they're going to go with their FUD next.
I have an action item now. I'm going to write a broadside called How Not to Open Your Source.
There you go.
And I'll talk about the right way to do it, which is to do it under a license that allows lots of good guys to look at it so you get security auditing, and the wrong way to do it, which is to let it leak out through a contract partner, threaten everybody with a copyright lawsuit if they ever look at it, and that way you get the worst of both worlds. You don't get the security auditing from the good guys, and you do get the cracks from the bad guys.
That's a good idea. I like that. That's good. And that was basically the thrust of putting those two articles up here. And it is definitely a Pandora's box for Microsoft. Now, there are one or more persons recommending that they open the source. And I don't think that's going to happen anytime soon.
Not going to happen.
I think there's plenty to talk about this leak, and you know, there's all sorts of other things that have happened. Like IBM is now talking about, and the link on this on the website as well. IBM is talking about porting Office, Microsoft Office, to...
They're not talking about it.
No, they're going to do it.
They're doing it.
Yeah. I don't know how advisable that is. I mean, you know, I'm sure that'll...
If I were a Microsoft strategic planner, that would scare the crap out of me.
Yeah, and if I was an IBM trying to dominate the enterprise, that is exactly what I would do.
Yeah, well, I'm not sure how good that's going to, what benefit that's going to have, though. I mean, other than scaring Microsoft.
The Office.
It's an intermediate step towards getting people over to products like OpenOffice.
That's
going to knock the pins out from under the Windows monopoly is what it's going to do, because Office is the only thing that's keeping a lot of enterprises pinned to Windows.
Yeah, but the thing is, what are they going to do? Are they going to use an emulation layer, or are they going to use a...
What they're going to do... According to all of the information that I have been given, is they're going to use CodeWeaver's technology, and use that to emulate to run current versions of Office. And
basically, you're going to implement the API and.
Right.
In Linux.
And they're going to pay for it. IBM's going to pay for it. They think that strategically that for them to develop this is a smart business move on the part of IBM. And I believe it. You know, I think it's an incredibly intelligent thing for them to do. In the long run, I got a feeling Microsoft is going to be mighty grateful. it's ironic that may end up being the case in the long run, but it's going to end up grateful.
In other words, people would be buying Microsoft Office as it stands, and then basically executing it under an emulation.
Yeah, yeah, and that's not so stupid. And it really isn't, because
if it works.
Well, yeah, as good as OpenOffice is, it's not ideal for everybody. Now, it's probably ideal for 80% of the businesses in the world. The 80% of the businesses that only use 20% of the capabilities of Microsoft Office anyways. The issue then becomes those businesses that are not using 20% of the capabilities of Office, that are using, you know, 50%, 70% of the capabilities of Office. Those companies that are using all the fancy object linking and embedding stuff that Office will do.
Mm-hmm.
Many companies, including your billion-dollar enterprises, have invested a lot of money in developing extremely sophisticated macros as productivity tools for their employees, and they're not anxious to let go of them immediately as part of the step towards Linux.
Well, those companies have invested quite a bit of effort into that. A lot of big companies have invested quite a bit of effort into Microsoft Office.
Right, and so IBM...
Using
IBM,
the basic Microsoft basic interface.
Yep. So IBM thinks it's an opportunity for them to satisfy the needs of that real sophisticated Office user, I guess.
Now, there's two sides to that, though. Microsoft cooperating, and if so, how long will they cooperate before
Microsoft,
they realize that they're hurting
Microsoft
them?
Microsoft disavows any cooperation in this project whatsoever.
Okay.
They don't want anything to do with it. Yeah.
They don't want anything to do with it, and this is what's going to happen. They'll continue to change their document standards, and of course now that
they... if they do that, they're going to break all the macros for all of their clients and piss them off and force them to... if those clients are going to have to redevelop all of those macros, do you think they're going to redo it in another Windows product, or they're going to do it in an open standard because they've learned their lesson? Again, I got a feeling that Microsoft isn't quite that stupid yet.
but still, I mean, that's something they've done for years.
Yes, they have, but they have never had quite as imminent a threat as this staring them in the face. That IBM is just waving this under their nose.
That's right.
This is a big deal. This is a big deal.
It was kind of like my big story of the week, the IBM thing.
Yeah.
Another one that is kind of interesting is that Lindo is now Lindash.
In some countries.
Huh? In some countries, yes.
In some
the operating system, Lindo, is now available as Lin, L-I-N, dash, 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 S. It's pronounced Lindash. It's one of these things that you cannot pronounce. It's kind of like the artist formerly known as Prince. I knew it would come to this in the computer industry that someone would come out with, you know, especially with hacker language, that someone would come out with a name that would be unpronounceable, and we would have to call them the software company formerly known as Lindows.
They should have chosen a name in Klingon. Yeah.
Klingon, that's it. Yeah, or you know, some other pronounceable language. At least Klingon would be pronounceable. There is probably dictionaries on that.
Oh, there is dictionaries on it.
Yeah. Michael Robertson strikes again.
Well, we got a couple other stories about Microsoft that let's go ahead and cover them while we're beaten up by Microsoft, because some of them are extremely interesting. One of them is just an entire thread that has really permeated the mainstream news websites of the country over the last 2 days, and that is this thread about Microsoft being a monoculture. A monoculture is a biological science term, and we've got a link to one of these stories that discusses the danger of Microsoft as a monoculture. It's on our website as Microsoft Dominance Poses Security Threat at CNN.com. But there's actually several of them. They're all based upon the same little bit of information, and that is a researcher, a guy by the name of Dan Greer, who is a fairly well-known, fairly respected guy in the computer security business, that wrote a white paper last September, and this white paper was a theoretical, academic white paper on the danger of Microsoft as a monoculture. And the theory, the treatise presented in this paper was that Microsoft as a monoculture dominating the the computer user business to the market share that they are presently holding presents itself as a clear and present danger to the entire society, because with the extreme level of dominance, a minor leak in the source code, and isn't this coincidental?
Well, this could be why the article has come back.
Actually, these articles on the monoculture broke before the security leaks did. But it's really neither here nor there. But anyway, this guy Greer hypothesized that we were likely to see things like massive virus intrusion into the computers of both consumers and businesses. And these massive intrusions are going to continue to be severe security problems, shutting down, you know, markets, shutting down industries from time to time, and that this is a real danger, and that this could simply and clearly be solved by breaking up the Microsoft monopoly. And this pissed off Microsoft so much that they caused such a stink over this white paper written by Greer, that Greer ended up getting fired by the company.
The company he worked for was at stake.
Yeah.
And he was fired because their major customer was Microsoft. Interesting.
Yeah. But Greer has since landed in at another security company, and he's doing just fine. And this company that he has landed at is actually using this white paper as an educational piece. And with they re-released the white paper right around the first of this year after Greer had started working with them. And little by little, as the last month and a half, 2 months has gone on, every time a new virus comes up, more and more people start talking about the concept of the monoculture and how important it is that we be aware of the danger that the monoculture can be.
For those of people less biologically in tune, a monoculture is a population with little or no a biological diversity.
All the population has the same DNA.
Basically.
Yeah, and it's
like the cheetahs.
Yeah, because of the fact that you all have the same DNA,
you could be wiped out by a virulent virus.
Yeah,
infection.
It wouldn't even have to be virulent. It could be a rather benign virus,
yeah.
A cold. But if it was a cold that had a hook. It could be extremely dangerous to the entire population. And there's no question that there are enough computers out there in the world that you could certainly call the IT industry subject to that monoculture threat in a very large degree. So I think it's a real interesting story and something that we need to follow up on. Eric, did you hear that the European Union rejected Microsoft's monopoly settlement offer?
Oh, yes, that's going to get interesting. They might actually have to pay a real fine or accept some real behavioral constraints. Boy, that would be novel.
You mean there's actually a court with teeth?
Well, I never expected the antitrust prosecution to come to anything anyway. Governments don't work that way.
Yeah, they...
Not in reality, they don't.
Yeah, they don't have a real good history. At least in the last 100 years, they have not had a real good history in our country.
Well, I guess what the European Union wants at this point is a first reparation is to remove the media player.
Yeah, and you know our people at Real Networks are real happy about the possibility of that.
And so are Apple. Basically, we got Apple and Real both marketing their own, and Microsoft is, of course, bundled their media player And what they want to do is they want to remove it.
Yep. Well, actually, I think there's other...
We ought to, and don't forget there's XMMS and what is it called? Winamp.
Yeah, Winamp and VoIP standards are being discussed right now. So there's a lot more things that have to go onto that ledger of things that need to be watched. Well, that's enough beating up on Microsoft. It's already 8:30. So, Eric, why don't you jump in with the story you wanted to talk about?
Sure. Very interesting development today. Craig Barrett at Intel has announced that they're going to be releasing later this year Xeons that have been extended to 64 bits. And the interesting thing is the word that didn't get mentioned in the press release, Itanium. Although, of course, Intel isn't going to say this because they'd lose face if they did, this is the death knell of the Itanium chip, which has been a dog ever since its first release. The fact that Intel is going to be putting marketing muscle behind the extended Yamhill technology, that was their internal code name for the extended 32-bit architecture, means that Itanium doesn't have a future anymore. The only thing that was keeping it in place, considering that Itanium cannot run 32-bit code, it's not upward compatible with the existing chips, was that there wasn't any place else to go, and they hoped that you'd just ignore AMD and the Opteron chips. Well, it has now become evident that they cannot ignore the Opteron chip. AMD is eating their lunch, as they deserve to, by the way. Those chips are wonderful designed. And Intel is now belatedly getting with reality and saying, yes, we're going to have to do the 3264 thing and emulate the Opteron, and this means that Itanium is history.
Yeah, I find this whole thing really interesting because it was Intel, was it not, who was saying, maybe a scant 6 months ago? Correct me if I'm wrong on this, but this is at least the way I remember it. It was like 6 months ago that Intel was saying that there's no place for 64-bit computing on the desktop.
Yeah. I think that was... What's interesting about the 64-bit thing is that at press time, probably the only operating systems that run on 64-bit Itanium with Linux and open source stuff.
Yeah.
That's not totally true.
Not entirely true, but, you know, that's where we were the first.
There are 64-bit Unixes out there, and there is also a Windows 2064.
There is a Windows 2064. However, I believe it's only run on a handful of demonstrator machines. I don't think it was ever released.
Not released.
You can get Windows 2064 from Microsoft if you request it.
Interesting.
But you pretty much have to be a research lab to get a copy of it.
And then you have to sign a hideous non-disclosure.
Well, I don't know about that. You know, I've never asked for one.
And we don't have. Is that going to be liable to be any Itaniums to fulfill that market niche now, right?
Yeah. It's interesting times, indeed.
Well, I'm wondering. Linux could use 64-bit NetBSD, and the Unixes can all run on 64-bit. Why? What's driving this move to the Opteron other than the existence of the 32-bit, 64-bit?
I think basically what happened is the Opteron sold better than anybody expected, and Intel decided we can't overlook this, or these guys are going to eat our lunch in the future.
Yeah, so it's basically the Windows market or the XPs that are running on the Opterons that's driving this, because Microsoft certainly wouldn't be responding to Linux running on it. It's got to be Windows.
Well, this isn't Microsoft responding, it's Intel responding.
Yeah, I know, but who's their big customer?
Well, that remains to be seen. Go look, like you just said, who are the users of the Opteron out there?
I'd like to see this looked into a little bit and find out exactly what's the rationale behind this.
Yeah, well, I think a lot of the Opteron users out there are gamers.
Yeah.
Okay.
You might well be right.
Okay. And so I don't know whether it's Microsoft driving it or the gaming community driving it. And I think that gaming community would be, although in not as large a measure as the Windows XP users, would certainly include those people running a 64-bit kernel on the Opteron for games.
Well, wait a second. The gamers are going to have a problem, though. There aren't any significant number of the Twitch games they like on Linux yet. Weirdly enough, there used to be, but the company that was doing it went out of business.
Yeah, but those that are there really perform unbelievably well.
Mm.
And it has gotten a lot of people very excited about the potential, the future of Opteron class CPUs showing up in game consoles and things like that. So I got a sneaking suspicion that a lot of this is being driven by the gaming community, but it remains to be seen. Well, Eric, while we got you on the phone, rather than us just talking about your open letter to Sun, why don't you do it, or at least help us talk about it? An interesting, just to give you, Eric, a background about an interesting couple of conversations that I have been having with the people at Sun over the last several weeks. Sun continues to perform in a somewhat schizophrenic behavior.
You notice that too.
Yeah, indeed they do.
Do they like Linux or not?
they keep on telling me about how much closer they want to get to the Linux community and how they want to start appealing to the community, and they want to discuss doing things with the Linux show. However, they have to talk to this person or this committee and that committee, and like the approval process at Sun is so far away from what an open source community is used to. Let's put it out on a mailing list and thrash it out in a couple of hours. That just doesn't happen within the culture of a company like Sun. And I think that this really certainly jives into the series of stories that have been coming out about Sun. We've got one of them on the website right now. Sun CEO, open source is our friend, article from ZDNet, and then a couple days later, you posted your open letter to Sun saying, "Hey, wake up, folks! Let's open source Java." Why don't you explain a little bit what your mindset was rattling the cage?
Well, sure. What happened was I read the statement that McNeely made at his analysts meeting where he said, open source is our friend. And my immediate reaction was, well, you're not really behaving in a consistently friendly manner. We're seeing a lot of surface manifestations and tiny little tactical moves, but also suggestions that Sun is really fairly confused about what its long-term direction is. So what I wanted to do was, here is Scott McNeely saying to the world, open source is our friend, and what I wanted to do is basically drive a stake in the ground and say, here's what it takes to be our friend.
Here's the type of thing that we need.
That's right. And I think that I only said what lots of people in the community have been thinking.
Yeah, I think so. I mean,
Java would be a good one, but another thing they could do is start making heavy contributions to the open source community in this form of code. They could do like IBM does.
Well, there's an argument that they're already doing that. There's an argument that they're already doing that through OpenOffice.
Yes.
I think there's a very legitimate argument there through OpenOffice. They've been huge contributors to the OpenOffice development. So, but that doesn't belittle the fact that Java could be an incredibly important thing to the entire IT industry. it has come close to be, maybe I'm going to overstep, but, okay, Java has come very close to becoming a fundamental technology to the Internet. I mean, it's treaded along the edge of that for years, but it just doesn't quite get there. I don't know what I mean by there yet, but do you understand what I'm saying, Eric?
It ain't the killer app.
Well, no, it is a killer app.
It is a killer app, but it's not the killer app.
I think that the way I'd prefer to describe the situation is that Java has consistently failed to live up to its potential of write once, run everywhere.
Right.
And the reason is that Sun keeps having choices between between tactics that will give it control and tactics that will encourage wide use, and Sun keeps opting for control.
That's right.
Now, I am in no way suggesting that that isn't a legitimate business decision. If that's the way they want to run things, then it's their property and they have the right to do that.
Sure.
But making that choice has consequences, and one of the consequences of making that choice is that when you run around describing yourself as a friend of open source, the open source community is going to go, well, no.
Okay. Well, let's take this.
Well, the Sun's chief technical evangelist, Simon Phipps, commented on your letter, and he says that's Eric Raymond's, simplistic accusations don't hold water. If this is the way open source treats its friends, I'd hate to see how it treats its enemies.
That's entertaining, considering I didn't make any accusations at all.
Well, it says, Raymond's first line of attack was to dispute whether CEO Scott McNeely's claim that open source model is our friend has any substance when at the same time Sun is filling the coffers of Linux litigator SCO through the licensing deals and still keeps Java under tight control.
Mm-hmm. I haven't actually seen the response from this guy. Nobody bothered
me. You want me to put you a link?
Yeah, please.
You in the IRC?
No, but if you mail it to me, it should get here in like
okay.
A minute or so.
Okay.
Let's take the same conversation and change the name of the company, okay? Because a lot of what's going on at Sun is, interestingly enough, the same exact stuff that's going on over at Novell. You know, you can say legitimately that Sun has contributed to the open office project. You can say legitimately that Sun has contributed to the community somewhat through the battle through their participation in the Battle of SCO. But I don't know how wholehearted that has actually been. But and likewise, you can say the same thing about Novell. Novell has done some really remarkable things in the last several weeks in terms of digging through old files, finding the AT&T document about what was it, section 2.01 about the legacy of derived works. I mean, that kind of stuff is really, really beneficial to the Linux community. And they're contributing to the Linux community, obviously, through SUSE and Zibian. But on the other hand, that company is behaving incredibly schizophrenic based upon the behaviors of certain parts of the company being so unbelievably secretive and so unbelievably closed-minded that they don't even want to talk to people in the open source community. Have any of you guys been getting the same kind of feeling as I have from Novell? I don't know whether this is Novell being overprotective because they've screwed up buyouts in the past, or if it's just the legacy of their old corporate culture just not willing to let go yet.
Well, I think maybe that last comment you made is more accurate. We still don't know. It might take a few weeks, few months for Novell to change their corporate culture to, we'll have to, I think that the jury is still out on Novell yet. Give them some time.
Yeah,
everything they've done in the public sphere concerning Linux has been a very positive thing.
Yeah, well, in the public sphere, I'm glad you used that.
Oh, I chose those words carefully.
Yeah, I'm glad you did. Because
but you know, I like to see what happens in reality. But let's give them some time.
Yeah, because again, I agree with you. I have no particular problems with what is going on in the public sphere. What is scaring me is the correspondence I am seeing between people within Novell and you know, people within the media, you know, also people who are members of the Linux community overall. There's some things that I'm just not at liberty to talk about yet, because I really haven't had a chance to sit down with all of the people who have been impacted by this and talk it over with them. But there's been some remarkably inane things coming out of Novell the last couple weeks that have really sort of surprised me. But I shouldn't be surprised.
You mean communications?
Yeah. But I shouldn't be surprised. But, you know, being fair to Novell, if we go back 5 years and we look at where IBM was 5 years ago, they were probably on some of the fringes just as paranoid and schizophrenic as both Sun and Novell are right now.
Yeah, but IBM had Irving.
Yeah.
Who carried the water for Linux, big time.
Yeah, well, and they had a...
And Novell doesn't have Irving.
Yeah, but, Well, like I said, I can't say all the things that I'd like to say right now in public. Hopefully by this time next week we'll have more information on Novell. I certainly hope they stop behaving in a schizophrenic way, but it's tough. I mean, think about it. You think about the fact that you've based the last 30 years history of your company on one business model, and you've got to really to a large degree take that business model and chuck it in the garbage. That may not be an easy thing for all of the executives within your company to swallow very quickly. And so I'm not surprised that the guy from Sun reacted to you that way, Eric.
Yeah, I've just read the response. The guy from Sun seems a little confused. At one point he says he doesn't think there are any barriers to releasing Sun as open source, but I haven't seen it get issued under an OSD compliant license yet. So I wonder what he thinks he means by that.
Yeah, well, why don't you ask him?
Well, the news story doesn't actually give me his email address or anything.
I'll
see if I can track the guy down.
I'll get it for you if you have any.
Thanks, I'd like that.
Because I have the email address of Denise, the senior Linux person at Sun right now, and I'm sure she could get his email address for you.
She's on the OSI board of directors,
Yes, she is.
Yeah, and she actually sent me mail recently, like a day ago, saying, way to go. Apparently there's internal politics at Sun. There are pro-open source people and there are anti-open source people.
Yeah, as there are at Novell.
Denny's, unsurprisingly, is on the pro-open source side.
Well, you're surprised she is?
No. I said unsurprisingly.
Yeah, well, you'd think so. You'd hope, being the lead, I can't remember what her title is, vice president of Linux evangelism or whatever her title is, you'd hope that a person having that title would be pro-open source. You'd hope. So, okay, well, let me take a real quick look at our list of stories here. something really important that we need to get done before we jump into segment number two. Oh, yeah. I just want to mention the story. We don't have to discuss it much, but this was covered during our first show of the year when we were making predictions. One of the things that we were talking about early in January was, you know, the direction that the industry was going to go in. And one of the things that, one of the threads of conversation that came up was Disney as a company. And at that time, we were discussing the possibility of what might happen to Disney in the next several months or up to a year. And out of the air, Doc pulled this prediction, said, you know what, I wouldn't be at all surprised to see Michael Eisner be given the boot within the next couple of months and see Steve Jobs walk in as the new chairman of the Disney company. And lo and behold, Disney company has totally imploded in the last 2 months. Roy Disney has resigned from the board of directors. Michael Eisner is being chased off of the board of directors as we speak. He could be gone in a matter of days. And what happened today on the news media, they started conjecturing who might come in and take over Disney. Well, who owns Pixar? Steve Jobs owns Pixar.
There is a truly awful, in the archaic sense, wonderful and terrible at the same time, there is a really awful thought.
Well, you know what? Don't be surprised if it happens, because this is a...
What, Steve Jobs buying Disney?
No, he won't buy Disney. He'll walk in. He'll bring in Pixar as a merger asset and claim chairman of the board of the Disney company. He right now, if Steve...
I don't know about that.
You know what? You need to... If, you know, he could walk in the door right now and ask for chairmanship, and I will bet you anything Roy Disney would walk up right behind him and make sure he got enough votes to get it.
Well, Roy Disney doesn't like Eisner at all in any way, shape, or form.
Yep. But I think that that could be the single most bizarre turn of events of the year if this were indeed to happen. So I just want, you know, people to remember, you heard it here first on the Linux show the first week of January when Doc predicted it, and it might actually come to pass. The rest of the stories that are down there that can wait till next week, there is a new website that I wanted to bring people's attention to, linuxbeginner.org. Go and take a look. It's a new question-answer type website for the Linux community. Check them out. Say hello. But we'll go ahead and take our break. This is the Linux Show. It is February the 17th, 2004. And I'm time-shifting again. We'll be right back in about 3 or 4 minutes with segment number two, talking about Elixir. Hang in there, everybody. Linux Show for February 17th, 2004. We're back for segment number two. Okay, so we're running a little bit behind schedule. That's life. And we know you guys will hang in there and listen to the rest of the show. So how about the news about Debian? Isn't that incredible that Debian has been proclaimed the fastest growing distribution, at least right at the moment, of all of the major distributions? It's growing at a percentage rate higher than any other distribution in the world.
Well, what was the base though? Was it grown from a small initial population, or?
Well, sure. Well, based upon its population of a couple of months ago, the last time the survey had been done, but it's still the percentage of growth, the month-to-month percentage of growth of Debian has been significantly higher as a percentage, not in terms of numbers, but as a percentage of growth has been significantly higher than the commercial distribution.
Color me unimpressed. That's a standard way to lie with statistics.
Okay, well. Red Hat is still numerically still getting by far the largest significant chunk of the downloads and sales. Be interesting to see how that changes a year from now. See how well Novell succeeds or fails. But let's go ahead and jump into segment number two. If you scroll down to the bottom half of the page, segment number two, Dave Wittinger and the Elixir of Life. We are joined tonight by our old friend Dave Wittinger. If you've been listening to the Linux Show for even a couple of months, you might remember Dave on the show last fall during the time frame when that was the anniversary of Linux Today. Dave was kind enough to join us with Brian Proffitt. But today, Dave's joining us to not only talk to us about what he's been up to in general with his life the last 6 months since he was last on, but to introduce us to his new pet project, LXCR.com, Elixir.com, new Linux news portal. So, Dave, the first thing I got to ask you.
Yes, sir.
Is why the hell do we need another? This is a loaded question, obviously.
Right.
Why the hell do we need another Linux news portal?
Well, the short answer is I'm not satisfied with any of the Linux news sites that are out there. You know, back in 97, I started doing Linux news because there was no Linux news out there. There was the news group, comp.os.linux.announce, and that was it. And, Slashdot had already started up, but, they're not really a Linux news site. And,
no, they aren't.
Yeah, so, what are you going to do? You need Linux news. You need good stuff. And you need the stuff that the community cares about, not a whole lot of business stuff and not a whole lot of nonstop on one topic. People want interesting news. And what are you going to do? So we started, 3Point, and that became Linux Today. And there's a long story with how Linux Today, kind of ended my relationship with them. And, but I've always been involved with Linux news as much as possible. I worked with LWN for most of the year 2002 and had a great time with those guys. I love LWN.
Linux Weekly News.
Yeah, LWN.
Absolutely wonderful, wonderful group of people.
Yeah, I think they're the best. And but their focus is on a very refined product. It's a weekly thing. I mean, they've got a daily newswire, but it's not at all their focus.
No, it's a weekly thing with security alerts and in-depth security alerts.
Yeah, exactly. And their kernel stuff. So anyway, there's no you go to Linux Today and it is just covered with advertisements. They throw a bunch of garbage stories into the queue. And I don't mean to be down-talking them, but it's just a poor quality product. And it's not good. I like to read news myself. I'm like everybody else. And where do I get my news? I mean, there's a few sites out there that do a decent job, but like OS News, they're pretty good. But what are you going to do? And actually what I did is I started compiling my own news for my own use, and I wasn't even posting it for anybody else to see. And it sounds kind of crazy, but it's a long story about that, too.
Yeah, it is a little crazy.
Yeah. Well, I've got some tricks up my sleeve for generating news.
Okay. Can we talk about some of the technical aspects of your website for a little while?
Sure.
Okay. First of all, first obvious question is, did you write this from scratch? You developed all of this?
You mean the code?
Yeah.
Well, I've been developing this code for actually a few years now. It's because while I wasn't doing any Linux news and any other thing like that, I was actually doing software consulting, and people were hiring me to do web-based development in PHP for them, and I ended up writing a framework on which I would write other applications. And so when I decided to do a Linux news site, really, it was less than a week, and I was done with the coding because the framework was already in place. So, you know, it's called the SCIF system. And
yeah, I saw that at the bottom of your website.
Yeah, and I've got other websites that run it, like Lin Training runs it, Lin Events, and I've got a gardening website and a couple other things too, King James Bible, you know. I can put together sites in days instead of, you know, weeks or months. So that's what I'm using for this. All I had to do was just write a module for the news, you know, for the newswire, and that didn't take very long. So all the member registrations, discussion forums, all that kind of stuff had already been programmed for me. And, of course, I continue to improve it and stuff.
Okay, so...
It runs PHP 5, actually.
Yeah, so SCIF is just... It's a code dump out of your own head over the last couple of years.
Yep, several years in development.
In terms of the way you've actually organized the information on the page, I'm sure there are reasons why you've done things the way you've done. You've got, for those of you who are online listening to us right now, just go to http://lxer.com so you know what the hell I'm talking about. And you'll see the main page for Elixir. And the main stories, the ones that are at least your most current 20, I believe,
yep,
what you're doing, you've got a really big headline and a short synopsis of the actual story itself.
Right.
What made you... this is not a criticism.
Sure.
Because I don't know, okay?
Mm-hmm.
What made you decide to go with a headline and a synopsis more along the lines of what Flashdot is doing than just a headline and, you know, 30 stories instead of, you know, 20? What was the logic?
Just a headline with no synopsis at all?
Or very little synopsis.
You know, that's actually interesting you asked. This is, I hate to, you know, I don't mean like I'm a copycat. I'm copying my own work. What Elixir looks like right now is basically exactly like the original Linux today.
I was going to say that, Dave, but
yeah.
I'm glad you said it for me.
Yeah, it's the same exact thing. It was a format that worked for me. They've changed that on Linux today. It's not that way anymore. But, I mean, down to the gray-colored background and everything, it's the same, the exact same format. It was a format that worked. The Linux community just loved it back on Linux.
It was simple. It
yeah.
was fast.
Yeah, and plus, I mean, why have a synopsis? It's because people want to read without clicking. But, like, a lot of times people don't want to read the entire story. They just want to read the important part. So I read the story for you, and I copy and paste out the paragraph that, you know, really explains, you know, what's the news here, and paste it in there, and then it's up to you whether you want to, you know, click the link into a new tab or, you know, move on to the next one. At least you know what's the story before you actually open it. A headline is useless, you know. Sunlight's no fires under Linux. What does that mean, you know? I got to read the lead. Now we're talking about a desktop, you know.
Now, you, of course, this is absolutely brand new. Right now, it's just you working on this, correct?
Yes.
A one-man team.
That's right.
And
Just like Linux Today.
Yeah, just like Linux Today started out, yeah.
Yeah, Linux Today was a one-man team, really, all the way up until just a few months before we actually sold it. It was just me.
You and Dwight.
Well, yeah, Dwight posted stories occasionally. But generally, you know, it doesn't take a lot of manpower to run a Linux news site. More time is spent, you know, coding new features and, you know, writing articles and stuff, which is more interesting anyway.
Well, for the developer, the site it certainly is more
interesting. Sure.
Now you say you're going to have the ability to well, there it is, right in front of me. Okay. You have the ability set in here to post comments and follow-ups about other posts that other people have done.
Sure.
Just like you were doing at Linux Today, and it's still currently done at Linux Today.
Right.
But there is one thing that is a real, I don't know, significant departure. And maybe this is the way you did it originally at Linux Day.
Yeah.
But when you click on the link to read the story, you're jumping directly to the actual content itself.
That's right.
So if the story is at OS News,
right,
you're not going to an expanded synopsis page.
That's right.
You're going to the story. Again, what was the logic behind that? Is this also what you did originally at Linux Today?
This is not what we did originally on Linux Today. With Linux Today, what we did, and actually, nobody knows this, not even Dwight. The truth is, on Linux Today, it was my inexperience in programming that it was the way it was, because I was brand new to programming when I first started Linux Today, and I did not know how to have a URL separate from the text body. So what I had to do is I had a story ID, you know, the headline, lead, and then you actually embed the link with HTML in the lead, and that's why it was. So that's why you had to go to that second page, and then you got the, you know, click here to read the story type of link.
So that was an accident.
Yeah. Yeah. But see, the thing about it is it generated twice the page views that you would normally have.
That was my exact point.
Yeah.
Is it generated page turns.
Yeah, but the problem was it was generating a lot of traffic at the expense of the time of my users. And Dwight and I had several fights about this very thing. I wanted, you know, once I got a little more experience, I wanted to change it so that, you know, the actual headline linked directly to the article, because I don't want to waste my users' time. They're here for the news. Let's get them in and get them out. They'll come back. And that's what sounds right. They will be back. You know, I promise. They're going to come back. You know, but, you know, Dwight, you know, he never really agreed in making that change. He liked it the way it was. He liked the traffic. He understood that our traffic would, you know, it would go, you know, it would, you know, just fall by 50% if we did that. And, you know, we had banner ads to sell back then. So we didn't make the change. And I saw the monetary problem, you know, with making that change. So, but anyway, now with Elixir, you know, I'm not nearly as concerned about that. And so, you know, there's the link. You can click right off of the home page, and I'm not going to waste your time with a bunch of intermediary pages. And if you want to talk about it, there's a link right there on the home page for the threads and the posts. You can click on that, and it'll take you straight down, you know. And also, speaking of that, I'm the only Linux news site that I know of that actually has my database completely open under an open content license. You can download XML feeds complete with the direct link to the external source. So I'm not going to force you to have to syndicate the news and send all of your users to me, and then I'll send your users off to the thing. If there's a link off of OS News on my site and you syndicate from me, you're going to get that link straight to OS News, because it's a completely open database.
Good idea.
Yeah. It's a very good idea, I think. And that's what I wanted to do with Linux Today, but again, you know, we would lose so much traffic, and people don't, you know, they're not linking every story to me anymore. They're linking it straight out, you know, other places. So, you know, right now I'm not driven by money and, you know, the need to generate a lot of traffic. I'm just trying to provide a good service. So.
Well, that in itself is a pretty significant and unique luxury.
Yep.
you're in a very fortunate place, and that, you know, there happens to be one whole hell of a lot of people who love to garden.
Yeah, that's exactly right. My gardening website is with financing all my other projects.
I was going to ask what the business model was.
Yep. There is no business model.
Yeah, my gardening. I've got a gardening website with 80,000 members, and I charge an annual subscription, and they pay.
Eric, this goes down on my list of incredibly expensive hobbies.
Wow.
You need to go, Eric, to davesgarden.com.
With all due respect to the gentleman, gardening bores me to tears.
Ah, but this is the premier gardening site.
Yeah, but you know what, Eric? There's a lot of us out there that love gardening, including me.
It takes all kinds to make a universe.
Yeah, it certainly does. Certainly does. And as long as he's able to generate that kind of following on the gardening site, hey, more power to him.
The funny part is gardening bores me, but I have a green thumb.
Well,
how does that work?
I don't know. So Dave, what's the next step in the development of Lixir?
Well, I've got first goal was just get it up, get the newswire going, and get the stories flowing. And there's a lot of back end development that you don't see on the front end, and I've got a lot of scripts that, you know, that go out on the internet. It's basically my own robot that grabs, you know, all the XML and RSS feeds, and sites that don't have that, I've written screen scrapers for every single different site, like eWeek and CNET. So it scrapes all those guys, and then it checks the database, says it's already there, it's not, then post it and send an email. So really, I mean, almost every story in there, I didn't post, I just went and approved. You know, it's kind of like I've got a moderation queue, and my robot does all this work for me. And
oh, how slick.
Yeah. Yeah, it's actually pretty nice. I spend less than an hour a day on actually handling the stories, the newswire.
Do you have RSS yet?
Yeah. Well, RDF. I've got RDF 091 feeds, both for just my original content and then also for the main newswire with all the other stuff. You know, complete with the external links.
Impressive.
Yeah. Thanks. I'm having fun with it, but okay, so going forward, so anyway, like I said, in the beginning I spent a lot of time, you know, writing all the back-end stuff, just getting it, you know, set up, and that's pretty much done, and now I'm moving forward and I'm putting together a lot of new features for the users, stuff that I really want to do on Linux Today, but honestly, I didn't have the experience. I was a brand new programmer when I started Linux Today, so now with Elixir, I'm able to, you know, really put some real features in, and for example, something I launched just the other day was a mailing, you know, an email alert feature where you can go and you give your email address and you say, here's the specific topics that I'm interested in, just these topics, and then submit it. And then you can say, give it to me nightly or give it to immediately. And if you select immediately, the minute I post that story, it's going to email you the story. And it's not going to give you a stupid link to my site. It's going to give you the direct link to CNET or to OS News or wherever. And then same with the nightly thing, except for it compiles it in a nice, attractive, you know, all 30 stories right there. Pretty nice. That's just one feature. And I want another feature where you can filter the home page in the same way. And kind of like Slash that does that, too. Actually, I think everybody does that. I need that, too. That's going to be pretty easy. And I want to have separate sections, security alerts. I want you to be able to subscribe just to security alerts so you can say, all right, I'm a Red Hat and Fedora user. So these two guys, anytime there's a security alert on either one of these, email me immediately. And stuff like that. A bunch of different kinds of features that I've got on my to-do list that I think are going to be pretty useful, especially the sysadmins out there.
That's a nice, clean looking implementation. I noticed, and I can't resist this, Dave, you'll have to forgive me.
Okay.
I noticed that all those stories say zero threads and zero posts, zero threads and zero posts, zero threads and zero posts.
Yes.
Do you think if I posted a reply to one of these things, I would get first post?
No. Yeah, but you got to sign up first.
I signed up. I'm already signed up. Can I get first post?
You can get first post. I'll tell you what, I'll reserve the spot for you, Arnie. Pick a story. Tell me which one you want, and I'll make sure you get the first post.
There already is a first
I'm
post.
Teasing you, Dave.
I know. You know, actually, when I first launched Elixir, I didn't have that link. It just said discuss. It didn't tell you how many posts or threads, because there were none. And everybody.
There is one post.
There's something important I haven't heard yet.
What's that?
The URL of the site.
Oh, yeah, I've done it. LXER.com.
LXER?
Yeah, yep. LXER.com.
Okay, let me go check it out.
It's beautiful.
You know, really, this week has been, or not this week, this past week that we just finished, that was my first week online, and I did over 60,000 unique visitors last week alone. It was amazing. Of course, the flash.link didn't hurt anything.
No, not at all.
Yeah.
Probably the only thing, and this is like just one of the my bugaboos, and this is true of like every, just about every news website in the world, is the headlines are like, for me, way too big.
Yes.
And I find big, glaring headlines sort of irritate my eyes.
Yep, I have a solution for you.
Because my eyes are funky.
Mm-hmm.
And what is my solution?
There's exactly two different things that you can do. Number one is in your control. Hold down the control key and mouse down with your scroll button, and that will lower the font size. Or number two, I understand that Linux people are sophisticated folks, and they may not like the nice, pretty layout that I've selected for them. So if you sign up for your own account, you can go to your preferences pages, and you can change the entire layout of the site.
You can put in your own CSS sheet, is that it?
Yeah, you can do everything. I mean,
very nice.
I give you the header, the footer, the HTML for those boxes that you see up there, the colors. It's all just pure HTML. Everything, every HTML that the site is going to send you is configurable by you and your preferences. So I don't let you just change your colors. I'll let you change everything. This is kind of a feature from the SCIF system from before. I think it's a nice feature.
Oh, it should be that way.
Yeah. So I mean, if you don't like the colors, or if you don't like the way my boxes look, if you want rounded corners, or hey, if you want, you know, a really light one for your PDA or something, just go in there and just strip the HTML and put whatever you want. Add your own style sheets, whatever.
I have a suggestion.
Yes, sir.
Perhaps it would be a fun thing to add a forum on the site where people could swap CSS style sheets.
That's a good idea.
Yeah.
I like that.
You can go see how other people are designing the appearance of the site.
Hmm. Yeah, that's a good idea.
I like that.
Yeah, I'll put it on the to-do. I think it's fun.
Now, you said you had 65,000 visitors.
Then what you could do is you could look at screenshots from everybody's different desktop, from everybody's different layouts, and just say, I like Bill.
Yeah.
And make Bill's layout my layout.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. This could be, what they call it, skins, elixirskins.org.
Right. Rush to the domain registration site. All right, anyway, 60,000 what?
You said last week you had 65,000 unique visitors.
Yep.
How many people have registered so far?
You know what? I don't know. Let me take a look, actually.
I mean, not counting the 10 or 20 of us that have registered in the last hour.
Yeah, let's see. Wow, there have been 31 logins in the last hour.
I'm registering now.
I think everybody's registered. I've got a total of 101 members, 70 before today.
Wow, we tripled your size.
Yeah, amazing.
Just wait till next week when the archive and the blog kicks in.
Oh yeah.
Right now there's
not a lot of reasons to sign up for a membership.
Yeah.
So I don't let the low membership numbers, you know, concern me. For example, with Linux Today, I only had 2,000 members signed up when I sold Linux Today, out of 500,000 visitors a month, 2,000. You know, when you have a Linux news site, you hit the homepage and you jump off and you're gone. You don't need that membership. So I think
the membership's kind of nice because you get to post and
right. A lot of people I found they don't care to post. They don't care to, you know, even read the posts as much. And you know, there's no reason for them to have a membership. You can force them to get a membership by saying this feature is only available, you know, to people who are signed up. Like, for example, on Linux Today, you were forced to have to sign up if you want that cool, you know, new, you know, to appear for each story that you haven't yet seen. But on LXR, I don't force that. I just give it to you anyway. I use cookies to, you know, tell me last time you hit, if you have cookies enabled.
That's cool.
Yeah. I like that little button, you know, it's like a little exclamation mark, and then it tells you it's new. Of course, you know, It doesn't help me because I already saw the story before I posted it, but it helped everybody else. And hey, you know, if I can't be a user of a good Linux news site, I can be the admin of one. And plus, I just want an excuse to get to go back to the trade shows again. Get in free.
Submit story.
Uh-oh. You're in trouble now, Dave.
Why?
Well,
Eric is submitting stories to your website.
No, I'm trying to discover the correct email address so I can put this site on my shout list when I put out broadsides.
Oh, let me give it to you, Eric.
Okay, hold on.
Because I don't publish the email address on the website.
Okay, yep. In that case, why don't you mail it to me?
What's your email address?
ESR
yep.
at thyrsus.com, THYRSUS dot com.
THYRSUS?
Yes.
Yep. I'll go ahead and email you his address just in case you got it wrong. But no, very, very cool. I love jumping in really early during the formation of a new entity and really camping out and participating in its development, watching it grow, helping it grow. There's a number of people in our IRC tonight who have pretty new Linux websites that we've talked about in recent shows and are real pleased that they've joined our little family here as well. So I see Jeremy from LinuxQuestions.org out there and a couple other people that are in a relatively similar place to you right now, Dave. It's going to be an exciting and fun time.
Yep.
That's for sure. And I tell you, you're in a definitely an enviable place, though, from the standpoint that you really don't have to worry about paying the electric bill or
yep.
the bandwidth bill.
Yep.
That's really, I mean, people don't realize about Linux websites, how expensive they can really be to support.
Oof.
Once they start to get used.
Oh, yeah.
People don't, you know, people, they'll see, you know, okay, $350 a month for, you know, some virtual hosting account
right.
gives you 50 gigabytes of downloads. They don't realize how quick you can go through 50 gigabytes of downloads.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it can happen really fast.
You know, on Linux today, we had our, you know, we needed several servers to handle the load. And, you know, so that rules out, you know, these cheap colo, you know, places. And we had an ISP in Dallas on a DS3, and we were paying him over $1,000 a month for all the bandwidth that we were using.
Oh, dunked out at one bit.
Yeah, and that hurt writing a checkout every month.
Yeah, he had what kind of line did you connect?
DS3.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, and he said that I used up almost his whole pipe.
Yeah, he was probably paying $12,000 what he was charging you $1,000 for.
Yeah, well, he had a lot of other customers, too, so I'm sure he was. Dennis Tenney was his name. I don't know what he's up to anymore. But, yeah, it's expensive. It's expensive. It's really nice having this gardening site because, you know, with that, I get paid. That's what pays me. It pays my salary, and I draw a salary out of it every month. Once a month. And they pay for my servers and bandwidth, everything. I got two servers. And so, like, last week while I was getting slash-dotted, I mirrored my content on my other server down in Miami. And I was serving both as a round-robin type of thing. So every other time you were hitting my server in Miami, and by distributing the load, it didn't affect me at all. That was nice.
So you're hosting this yourself?
Yeah. I mean, I got my own box. I've got two boxes. Yeah. No co-location stuff for me. Well, I mean, yeah, co-location, but it's my own box that I built and sent up there. I'm about to upgrade it because this Elixir site is getting a lot of traffic, and I want it to get a little bit snappier. It's using a couple hundred jiffies per page load. And I'm thinking about an Opteron box, actually.
Ah.
Yeah, 4 gigs of RAM. I'm looking at it anyway. I'm drooling.
Do you recall 2.5 years ago or so seeing my article on the ultimate Linux box?
No, I don't recall.
Well, I did one, and there's going to be a follow-up in a couple months. I'm talking with the people in New Mexico that I do these with, a small hardware company called Los Alamos Computers that custom builds machines.
Yeah.
And this time around, it's going to be a dual Opteron machine. Yes, you can get those. There's a series of motherboards from Tian that will take two Opterons.
That's got to be an outrageously expensive motherboard.
I think it's, I'm not sure, but I think it's $3,000.
Oh, you're kidding. I was going to say it's probably close to $1,000.
I was thinking $1,200.
Yeah, but $3,000, I would have never guessed that.
I'm not sure. I'd have to go back and look.
Yeah, out of my budget.
Well, that's the nice thing about doing these Superbox articles is somebody else pays for the hardware.
Yeah, well, I suppose. Yeah, we're actually negotiating a new server contract with the people from Penguin Computing right now. Get a couple more machines out of them. Hopefully, maybe I don't know if we'll get a dual Opteron, but we'll see what we can get.
I'll tell you, like Sam Ockman or not, Penguin Computing, they've been there. They've been there for a long time, and they've been really supportive of Linux.
Yeah, I like Sam Ockman.
Yeah, but a lot of people don't.
I know.
Sam's a good guy.
Yeah. He's got, on the surface, he can seem real cold. And you really have to spend the time, in private, talking to him, getting to know him. And Sam and I, for better or for worse, we sort of got stranded at a trade show one time and ended up spending about 5 or 6 hours just sitting on a couple of crates waiting for some trucks to go up.
Was that the disaster in Kansas?
No. A different one. that thing from Kansas I don't even like to talk about. Oh, man. But no, this was actually a conference in New York City. It was just hell. You know, it was bad weather and a whole bunch of other stuff. But it really gave us the opportunity to sit down with a six pack of beer and just get to know each other a hell of a lot better. And he's really, once you really get to know him, he's a pretty nice guy. And interesting things going on at that company with the recent acquisition of Skills, the Beowulf clustering company.
That's Becker.
Yep.
Don Becker.
Yep. Yeah, he's a great guy too.
Oh yeah.
Yes, he is.
He's one of my favorites.
Yep. Yeah. In fact, I'm trying to encourage him to actually put together a Beowulf conference because I think that would be something a lot of people would go to.
I mean, hasn't he written just about all the modules for NICs?
Yeah.
Probably half or better, yeah.
Yeah.
And the tulip driver is the best one.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, he's a genius. I saw him at the Linux World in 99, and the summer one, and I was having trouble with my laptop, and he came over, and I don't know what he was doing. He came to my booth, and he was just hanging around. And I said, "Oh, Donald Becker, I'm having trouble with my PCMCIA." And he said, "Well, I wrote the original PCMCIA driver for Linux. Let me see." So here he is, you know, the original author of the PCMCIA code for the Linux kernel. You know, nice to actually try to help me with my laptop. That was pretty neat.
He's a great guy.
Yeah, he is. He ended up staying there and talking to us for a couple hours. Real nice guy, super nice, and he is a genius. Amazing. Like Alan Cox. You know, just the same kind of genius.
Yep. Well, it is 30 minutes after the hour, so we're going to have to cut out of here. It's really great to have you join us again.
The pleasure is mine.
Don't be keeping such a distance in the future. We'll be looking forward to having you join us. Maybe next time we'll talk about gardening.
Yeah, I'll tell you how to cross Bregman's. He has his leg or Stromia's.
I love gardening. I spend an inordinate amount of my time in my garden every summer.
I need to give you a free subscription to my site then.
Oh, no, I'll be happy to pay for it.
No. I'll set you up an account.
Cool.
Yeah. Yeah, you can join us. We've got some pretty hardcore gardeners on there.
Yeah, I'm sort of a maniac zinnia grower.
Mm.
Yeah.
I got a plant I'm going to introduce you to called Brugmansia. We'll talk about that later.
Okay, well, again, it is 30 minutes after the hour, so that's it for this week's edition of The Linux Show. A couple of little bits of news that I do need to sneak in to all of the listeners. Last week we mentioned that we would probably be attending an event in the Salt Lake City market, and we started recruiting people to help out with us doing our remote broadcast. Well, we have decided to back out on that event. The reasons for us backing out on that event will be talked about more in detail in future weeks. We were just not particularly happy with the situation that we were being asked to walk into. And so pretty much as of this afternoon, I'd come to the conclusion that this was just not something that we wanted to take the risk at doing. You know, the Linux Show may be a tiny little company, but we are a media company, and we do have some integrity. And although we are polite and respectful to our guests when they do come on our show, we certainly don't want a vendor or a conference sponsor dictating the kind of content that we can or cannot have on the Linux Show. That would make us feel like we were, you know, paid PR hacks for the people running that particular show. And we just don't want to do that kind of stuff. So although it would have been a real fun thing to do, we have decided to take a pass on the remote broadcast in Salt Lake City in March. However, there's going to be some additional remote broadcasts that we're going to be talking about in the very, very, very near future, probably next week. We're going to have some news for you. So hang on there. We do try and get around the country during the course of each year so that people can stop by the expos and say hi. Met a lot of Linux users in New York City last month. It was a lot of fun, and hope to meet more of you as the months go by. But make sure you get out to our website, check out the ways you can get involved with being a part of our community, setting up a mirror site. If people will email to staff@thelinuxshow.com, we have started to put together the notes on how to do peercasting, or how we are going to do peercasting. We're going to let you do it. So check out our website to get involved with the Linux Show community. Make sure you do tell your friends all about us. Helps us grow the show community every single week. So that's it. Until next week, thanks for stopping by. We are out of here. Good night, everybody.